Welcome to Find, Tell, Share, the Storytellers Podcast, where we meet entrepreneurial artists who share their stories as we discuss everything storytelling. I'm Chris Sissons.
And I'm Gemma Rosenthal of Creative Hearts. On today's show, we'll explore the art of leadership, collaboration, and the consciousness of anthills.
This time we're delighted to introduce our guest, Oakland McCulloch. Oakland is a retired Lieutenant Colonel and internationally recognised keynote speaker and the author of the 2021 release, Your Leadership Legacy, Becoming the Leader You Were Meant to Be. Both his leadership presentation and his book are based on over 40 years of leadership experience, including 23 years as a combat arms officer in the United States Army. Oak highlights principles that will benefit today's leaders and inspire the leaders of tomorrow in any profession and at any level of leadership. So welcome to Find, Tell, Share, Oak.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, Chris and Gemma.
Welcome.
I thought it'd be good to focus on the theme of leadership. And this first question is one that's been very much on my mind. And I must say, I was surprised to hear somebody actually raise this issue on the radio this morning. It's about the war in Ukraine. And there's so much to deplore. But one thing that for me has stood out and is rarely raised in the media is Putin's treatment of his own soldiers. It's always seemed to me the armed forces work where there's a good deal of trust and people's lives are not sacrificed for no particular reason. And yet we're seeing, it seems particularly on the Russian side, that there's almost carelessness about leadership. And so my question is, to what extent is good leadership in the armed forces concerned with the welfare of the people in the lower ranks?
Yeah, so I think it depends on who you talk to, whatever, about the war in Ukraine. But even beyond that, leadership is about people, plain and simple. I mean, it isn't about flow charts. It's not about organizational charts. It's not even really about bottom line if you're in the business or any of those other things. It's about people. And if you get that right, then the other things fall in line. In the Army, we have this saying, it says, mission first, people always. You got to accomplish the mission. That's your job. And again, that's just the same in business as it is in the military. You got to accomplish the mission, but you got to take care of people. And I found that if you take care of people, if you get that piece right, then all the other things are going to fall in place and you're going to have a successful organization that's going to make profits or going to do what you need it to do, but you do it for the right reasons, not because you're greedy or because you're selfish or whatever. You do it because you took care of people, and that's the key.
Yes, I think that is one of the most impressive things about the armed services, certainly in Britain and certainly in the United States.
Obviously. Oh, like any successful organ, but certainly militaries really depend on the trust. Trust is a 360-degree thing. It isn't just the people you lead trusting you. You got to trust them, and the people you lead all have to trust each other, the whole team. You know, and there's a famous quote by a famous American football coach, Vince Lombardi, who was probably the greatest American football coach ever. And he said, a team is not a group of people who play together. A team is a group of people who trust each other. And it all comes down to trust. And people won't, if they don't trust you, they in the military, they may have to do what you tell them to do because that's the way it is. But if they trust you, they'll even go that extra mile and give you that extra effort.
And I'm sure the success of the military is in that deep understanding that no one is immortal.
Yes.
There is always the possibility that you or the person next to you is going to die today.
Absolutely. I tell young leaders all the time that we are sending into the Army, I said, look, you're joining a profession where you can make all the right decisions and you can do everything right and somebody still might die. That's the business that we're in. And if you can't handle that, you need to go do something else, because that's the fact of life.
I'm sure there's a great deal that civilian organizations can learn from that, because my experience in community development in Britain is that often voluntary or community organizations are led by people who are, one term I've heard is a self-perpetuating oligarchy. They just continue forever. There's no right. awareness that they need to move aside and allow others up, and so that they can move on to other things. And I would guess that in the military, because you have very clear ranks, moving people up through the ranks is something that comes a lot more naturally than it does in civilian organizations.
Yeah, well, one of the things that when I go around and talk to organizations, civilian organizations, companies, is I always emphasize the point that you have to have a professional development program, well-defined, well-established in your organization, so that young men and women who want to move up and be leaders, future leaders in your organization, see that they have a path to get there. Because if they don't have that path, and that's one of their ambitions is to be a leader, to grow as a leader, and you don't have that professional development path for them, they're going to go somewhere else. People are not going to stay where they don't feel wanted and taken care of. And I think that of this great resignation that we're seeing, that people are leaving companies because they're just not taken care of. And people are going to go to places that take care of them.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of truth in that. So you've brought us a story.
Yeah, so I'm a firm believer in servant leadership. And servant leadership to me is people, taking care of people. And the way you do that, the only way you get to build that trust and get people to be a part of a team is to get to know them. And that's a huge part of what I believe in, is that you got to get to know the people that you have a privilege to lead. And it is a privilege, no doubt about it. And so I've had a couple of mentors who really emphasized that to me. But one of them, and I'll tell you two quick stories about getting to know the people who you get to lead. One of them, I was a captain in the United States Army, and my boss was a lieutenant colonel. And every day when I'd walk into the office, I'd walk past him in the hallway. Not every day, a bunch of days, I'd end up walking past him. And the very first time I was walking past him, I was new to the organization. And he stops me and he says, "How you doing, Oak?" And I said, "Well, I'm fine." And I just kept walking. And he said, No. He said, "Come on back here. How are you? I want to know how you are." And then he stood there and talked to me for a few minutes. And then our kids were on the same soccer team. He said, "How's your wife?" And I'd tell him. And then he said, "And both your kids had a soccer game this weekend. How did they do?" And just talked to me for about, I don't know, 5, 6, 10 minutes. Not once did he look down at his watch like he had a better place to be. And he was busy. And so I thought, you know, and he did that a couple times to me to learn a little bit about me and my family, personal stuff, not work stuff. And I thought I was special until one day I stuck my head out the door of my office and he was doing it to another captain in the hallway. So that was really his thing, was he wanted to get to know the people he had the privilege to lead. And I learned from that and I took from that. And when I was a company commander in charge of a basic training company, so I was bringing in 250 brand new privates every 3 months and training them to go out into the force, I said, I got to get to know these people that I'm leading. And so one day I tried to get out of my office as much as possible and just spend time around them and get to know them. And one day we were out on the range firing our tanks and we were at lunch break and I walk up to this tank and there's three privates sitting up on top of the tank. So I grabbed an MRE, one of our little meals that we have. And I hopped up on the tank and I sat there and I ate lunch with them. And I was asking them, "So what do you want to do after this? What's your goals in life?" And they were telling me, and one of them said they wanted to maybe be a leader and maybe be an officer in the Army. And I kind of explained how that goes and didn't think anything of it. You know, I had a good conversation with them. 20 years later, I got a phone call And it was one of those privates. And he said, "Sir, I know you don't remember me," he said, "but you had lunch with me on a tank one time when I was in basic training." I said, "You're right. I don't remember your name, and I probably couldn't pick you out, but I remember that day." And he said, "Well, I just want to let you know that that conversation changed my life. That after I did my 4 years in the Army as a private, as an enlisted soldier, I got out, I went to college, I got my degree, I went through Army ROTC, I did my 20 years in the Army, and now I'm a business, I own my own business." And he said, "And it all started with that conversation." So you got to get to know the people. That's how they build that trust. And then that they'll stay in contact with you for years and years and years, maybe. So I think that's my story, is that you have to, if you want to be a leader, you got to get to know the people in your organization.
Thank you so much for sharing that story. I absolutely agree with what you were saying, Oakland, about getting to know the people who you lead. And I loved how you used your story to demonstrate that so clearly, and to share that, you know, somebody got back in touch with you after so many years and they were able to share their story and how that had benefited them. And I know when I think about some of my mentors and things that people have said, or just little nuggets, it really does have an impact on how you live your life. And a lot of people aren't aware of the impact that they make just through speaking with people, just a conversation, or just listening to what someone has to say.
Yeah, you know, I've been lucky in my career. You know, the last 16 years of my working for the Army or in the Army, I've been doing Army ROTC, and here in the United States, that's a way to get a commission in the United States Army. So I've had my hand in one way or another commissioning over 500 lieutenants in the United States Army over the last 16 years. And a lot of them do stay in contact. You know, I look at being a leader as part of that. A huge part of that is being a mentor. Mm-hmm. And, you know, being there for them if they have questions, or if they got an issue that they don't really know how to solve, maybe they'll give me a call or send me an email and say, "Hey, sir, what do you think about this? This is a decision I'm thinking about making. What do you think?" And I've had lots of people who have done that over the years, because mentorship is so important. Part of being a leader, you know, my book, one of the whole reasons I named it what I did, I made the title Your Leadership Legacy, is because I really do believe that part of your job as a leader is to leave a legacy. And it's, in my opinion, legacy is a two-part piece. It's very little what you actually accomplished. It does matter, because in the real world, results matter. In fantasy land, where everybody's a winner and everybody gets a trophy, maybe not. But in the real world, results do matter. So a small part of your legacy is what you actually accomplished. But the bigger part of what your legacy is that next generation of leaders that you helped create. And when I was running my ROTC program, I had a guy who worked for me, and I say he worked for me. He was probably a better leader than I was. And we were talking about the significance of what we were doing, producing leaders for the next generation of leaders for the Army and the nation. And he said, "You know, sir, great leadership handed down from generation to generation is what develops great nations." And I thought, wow, what a powerful quote. But, you know, the most powerful part of that quote for me is that you can substitute the word nations for anything you want: a company, a sports team, a hospital, a food bank, university. It doesn't matter. Because every organization needs good leadership, and it's our responsibility as current leaders to develop that next generation of leaders.
Yeah, definitely. I used to work in a lot of schools and with young people, and what we pass down to the next generation, it's like that is what is going to be the future. So, yeah. You know, how we treat people, like you said, I always used to find that even though I was teaching them, it very much was a mentorship coaching relationship. Sure. Even before I got my coaching qualification, it was like I was always interested in what do they have to bring, what do they want to say, how do they want to express it, what moves do they want to do. And so I really agree with you there in terms of passing it on to the next generation is so important.
Yeah, we are going to reap what we sow. I promise. If we don't do a good job as current leaders producing the next generation, that's what we're going to get. And I really believe that. And, you know, one of the things you just hit on, Gemma, is very important, is, in my opinion, as a leader, you know, listening to the people who you're leading, because I don't care how long you've been a leader, you don't have all the answers. If you don't listen to other people when you're making decisions and doing things, then you're only using your knowledge, your skills, and your abilities. And you're cheating that organization, because there's all kinds of talent out there that's working for you. You got to tap into their knowledge, their experience, their leadership, and their talents if you want your organization to be the best it can be. And a lot of leaders are afraid to do that. They're insecure to listen and take advice from people that work for them. And again, some of the best leaders I've ever known in my life worked for me. They were good leaders. Just because I was in charge doesn't mean they weren't good leaders.
Yeah, that's so true. Somebody can be a leader within an organization, but not actually have a leadership role.
Absolutely. Or a title. Absolutely.
Yeah. That's such an important part to make. And so that we can all see ourselves as leaders, no matter what your position might be, you are still leading. Because if you're serving people, then you're leading.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
Mm-hmm. Chris, what are your thoughts on Oakland's story?
Yeah, well, a lot of it is really familiar. And there was I was never quite sure whether this was a joke or whether it was serious, but there's a management method called MBWA, which stands for management by walking about or wandering about.
Yeah.
I think even if it's more humorous than real, I think it really hits on a very important point that often good leadership doesn't even look like leadership. It looks random, it looks casual, and yet things emerge from it. I suppose it's a bit like the gardener who tends the garden and can't predict exactly what's going to bloom and what vegetables. I mean, they know what they planted, but they don't know what's going to grow this season and what's not going to do so well and so on. But they create the best possible space and criteria for that to happen.
Well, you know, I'm a firm believer in, I tell people, good leaders lead by walking around. I do. I mean, I tell young leaders, get out of your office. Nobody wants to follow somebody who's sitting behind a desk. Get out of your office and spend time with the people you're leading, where they are, where they work. And I tell them there's a couple things that help you do that. I said, number one, your goal every day should be to go out and find one person, just one, in your organization and find out something new about that person. Not about work, about their personal life. What's their spouse's name? What's the name of their kids? What sports do they play? What's their hobby? What do they like, don't like? Find one new thing out about one person every day. And a good way to do that, I had a boss who retired, a 3-star general. And he told me one day, he said, Oak, never, ever, ever turn down a chance to go get your own cup of coffee. He said, two things when you do that. Number one is that you show everybody in your organization that you're no better than they are. You have to go get your own cup of coffee just like they do. He said, and if you're lucky, you got 2 or 3 different ways to get to the coffee pot and back to your office. And along the way, stop and talk to people. That's how you get to know each other. And when you do that, then you'll start to see the trust start to explode in your organization.
And I think this is very interesting, because Gemma is developing leadership without leaving her office. And in fact, if she goes to get a cup of coffee, she's not leading. But working online is something new. And I think it might be quite useful just now to, if Gemma says a bit about Creatives Connect and how she's developing that leadership, taking into account what you've just said, Oak.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I just want to say that I do leave my office. I do leave home. A lot of my clients have, well, a few clients I've had recently, we've done outside sessions. So we actually went to the Peak District and went for a walk. And that's how we did the session, in an environment where they can feel comfortable to share. You know, there's a big open space. They can, you know, we're exercising. So there's just more kind of connection there, both with the client but also with the environment as well. So I've been really enjoying trying out coaching within an outdoor space. Has been a new thing, which has been good. And also I do sometimes hire out halls or healing rooms to do sessions as well, and workshops. So however, what Chris was saying is that a lot of my work is behind a computer and at my desk, and even just on my phone, because I'll be messaging people. And yeah, so my topic is around collaboration. So I set up Creative Hearts a few years ago. I'd already done some workshops, which I'd called Find Your Voice. And then I decided to branch out and call it Creative Hearts to include all types of creativity. So I work with people who are writers, singers, dancers, entrepreneurs, coaches, healers. And I just really am passionate about helping people to find what's their mission, what's their purpose, how can they express themselves in this moment. And, you know, in terms of leadership, it really is about getting to know the person and understanding what is it that they want, how are they going to get there. You know, this is all NLP coaching techniques. But in terms of leadership in collaboration, I don't just do it all myself. I often get guest hosts. So for example, with this podcast, we invite other entrepreneurs to come and tell their stories, because we know that me and Chris don't know everything. So if we were just talking every single week, it would get a bit boring, because we'd just be going from our pool of knowledge and wisdom, which is probably quite big. To be fair, Chris has worked many years and I've done quite a lot for my age, which is 32, although I don't look it, apparently, according to Oakland and a few other people have said. So what I'm trying to say is that since working with others, and I also get guests onto my shows at Creative Hearts Conversations and Creatives Connect, and it allows me to learn from other people. And it also allows me to offer a space for new leaders, as in I'm not just saying I'm the leader of this group and that's it. It's who would like to be the guest host this month. Obviously, they have to have some kind of business or artistic skills if they want to be a guest. I don't just get anyone on. But at the same time, it's allowing people to have that opportunity to share what their business is, how they work, what their skills are, you know, if they have any tools or techniques for everyone to learn from, you know, because it's about valuing each other and learning from each other. And I've found that that has been a really wonderful way of me receiving support, but also giving support. And it just allows the leadership aspect is just that we lead by bringing people together and listening and supporting each other. And yeah, just I find it helps everyone, really.
Well, you know, and I think what's important about that, Gemma, is, you know, I say get out of your office and walk around people. But if your business is like yours, you can still get to know people.
Yeah.
You just have to do it over Zoom meetings or phone calls or text, but you still show them that you care and you want to know about them. And as long as you do that, you can still build that relationship and that trust.
Yes.
So I think that that's a huge part of it, is that you have to make that effort, however that is. And, you know, I think you getting out, and I love the part where you're saying you get out and you walk and you're in a different environment. And I always use the example, if you call somebody into your office If you're the leader and you call somebody into your office and you ask them a question, you will get an entirely different answer than if you ask that same question down where they work. Because when they come into your office, now it's your office. It's kind of like when you get sent to the principal's office.
Yeah.
You know, what did I do? What trouble am I in? What, you know, if you're out there where they're working and ask them a question, it's a whole different story than if you ask it in your own office.
Yeah, well, that's interesting because I have been to London a few times to see clients as well. So in that sense, that I never really thought about it this way. But what you're saying is, you know, by going to their environment, to where they live, that's in a way supporting them even more because it's respecting where they are and seeing what their life is like and what their environment is.
Absolutely. I find that's huge. It's a big difference than calling somebody into your office and talking to them.
Yeah. Chris, you are talking about the consciousness of anthills. So how does that fit into leadership, or does it fit into leadership?
Yeah, I chose this particular topic because I'm just starting a new sequence of blog posts about artificial intelligence and folklore. And as part of my preparation for those posts, I thought I better reread this book, which is called Girdle, Escher, Bark, An Eternal Golden Braid by Douglas R. Hofstede. It was published in the 1980s, and it is about artificial intelligence. And those of you who can see, it's a very thick book. It's very much formed my view of artificial intelligence from the 1980s through to the time when ChatGPT was launched. And I thought, I better go back and remind myself of the arguments in this book, because I remember when I finished reading the book, I was pretty much convinced that it's not possible. And I'm only about halfway through rereading it, so I've still not caught up with why I thought that at the end. But it is a book that's well worth at least dipping into. The three names, Girdle, Escher, and Bark. Girdle was a mathematician who worked out that it's not possible to come up with a system with the internal logic that is absolutely foolproof, with no contradictions. It's just not possible. Escher was an artist who drew lots of the never-ending staircases and all of that sort of thing. And Bach wrote very complicated musical fugues. What I want to do is just to read you a short extract. The text is interspersed with dialogues which are based on Lewis Carroll, the author of Alice in Wonderland and Alice Through the Looking Glass. And they sort of illustrate the principles that were going on. The story so far, the tortoise has worked out a way of recording Bach's original fugue. He wrote several fugues, but it's from the Well-Tempered Clavier, but they actually record back in time. And the idea is that this conversation is going on while the fugue is playing in the background, and the strands of conversation echo the strands of the fugue, if that makes any sense. So there are four characters. There's the tortoise that I've mentioned. There's a crab, an anteater, and Achilles, who is probably a human being of some description. This is quite short, and it's set out like a play with each character. And hopefully you'll see what's going on in this and how it might echo a musical fugue. So the crab begins, and the crab says, "Evolution certainly works some miracles. You never know the next trick it will pull out of its sleeve. For instance, it wouldn't surprise me one bit if it were theoretically possible for two or more signals to pass through each other, each one unaware that the other one is also a signal, each one treating the other as if it were part of the background population." I should have mentioned they're discussing an anthill. So Anteater says, "It is better than theoretically possible. In fact, it happens routinely." Achilles, What a strange image that conjures up in my mind. I can just imagine ants moving in four different directions, some black, some white, crisscrossing together, forming an orderly pattern, almost like tortoise. A fugue, perhaps. Achilles, yes, that's it. An ant fugue. Crab, an interesting image, Achilles. By the way, all that talk of boiling water made me think of tea. Who would like some more? Achilles, I could do with another cup, Mr. C. Crab, very good. Achilles, do you suppose one could separate out the different visual voices of such an ant fugue? I know how hard it is for me. Tortoise, not for me, thank you. Achilles, to track a single voice. Anteater, I'd like some too, Mr. Crab. Achilles, in a musical fugue. Anteater, if it isn't too much trouble. Achilles, when all of them. Crab, not at all. Four cups of tea. Tortoise, three. Achilles, are going at once. Crab, coming right up. Anteater, that's an interesting thought, Achilles, but it's unlikely that anyone could draw such a picture in a convincing way. Achilles, that's too bad. Tortoise, perhaps you could answer this, Dr. Anteater. Does a signal from its creation until its dissolution always consist of the same set of ants? As a matter of fact, says the anteater, the individuals in a signal sometimes break off and get replaced by others of the same caste, if there are a few in the area. Most often signals arrive at their disintegration points with nary an ant in common with the starting lineup. Now, I don't know if you saw what was happening there, but there were two conversations. There was the conversation about the anthill and the signals, and the conversation about who wanted cups of tea. And they sort of crossed one another. And the reason I think this is an interesting take on leadership is the anteater doesn't see himself as a predator at all. He sees himself as a psychiatrist for anthills. And so if the anthill's consciousness is going off a bit, the ants are causing the problem. And the ants see him as a predator, but the anteater sees him as a friend. The consciousness of the anthill is just a metaphor. I'm not saying that anthills are really conscious. But the consciousness of the anthill is dependent on the seemingly random movements of the ants within it. So you've got this sort of build-up of layers of consciousness. And it's similar with computer programs. You've got the hardware, machine code, assembler code, compilers, and so on. And at each level, you can do things that can be done at the lower levels, but the lower the level is, the more complicated it gets. And the less awareness the lower levels have of what they're actually doing.
Now, does this mean I'm a lower level? Because I'm trying to understand.
Well, the way it works with humans is the cells in your brain, when you're thinking a thought, you're not thinking, I must trigger this cell.
No, it
the
just
cells
does it.
Sort of do what they do anyway.
Right.
But you know, when we're talking about leadership, we have a sort of hierarchical image where the leader is at the top and is guiding, mentoring people below. But with artificial intelligence and possibly with natural intelligence, it's the activity at the lower level that enables the activity at the higher level. But the higher level activity is more aware of what it's doing than the lower levels.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think that, you know, you got to have somebody who's in charge. I always tell people, somebody's always in charge. And if I'm the leader and I'm gone that day and something has to be done, somebody steps up and takes charge. But I think, you know, the key to be a good leader, one of the keys to being a good leader is that you got to understand that you are not the person who's going to make things happen. You're the person who comes up with the vision and the plan and the culture of your organization. And that's important. You know, the vision's where you want it to go. The plan's how you're going to get there. And the culture is who you as an organization are in that route. But you as a leader have to understand that it really comes down to, and one of the huge parts of being a leader is good communications. You got to communicate all that to the people who are actually going to make it happen. the people who work for you, the people you have the privilege to lead. If you can't do that, then everything breaks down. And when I go to organizations or companies that have me come talk to them, one of the first things I do is I ask the leader, the owner, the boss, what's your vision and what's your plan? And they'll tell me, and then I'll go to the lowest level of that organization. I say, what's the organization's vision and plan? Sometimes they can tell me, sometimes they can't. If they can't, we're in trouble. If they can, you know, good for them. But then I ask the deeper question, what is your part in that plan? Because if they don't know their part of the plan, what they have to do to make that plan successful, then we're wasting our time. So I think that, you know, there's certainly those layers and they have to interact, but you know, you do have the person who's in charge, who's making the plans, but they have to make sure that the people who are actually going to do it understand their part of it.
And presumably you see that very clearly in the military, where the rank and file soldiers have to know what the overall aim is. But once they're in actually in battle position, as it were, whether it's a battle with guns or they're dealing with a natural disaster or whatever, they then have to use their own initiative achieve the goal. They can't have a commanding officer who's saying, right, shoot that person and then that, that'd never work.
No, it doesn't. And again, the leader has to give that big picture. In the end, this is what I want it to look like. I don't care how we get there. We'll have a plan, but we all know the enemy has a say. Again, whether that's an actual enemy that you're shooting at or it's the weather or whatever, whatever you make a plan on, there's always an enemy to it that it has a say. And your plan may not go perfect. It isn't going to go perfect. That's just a fact of life. So you have to have trained those people that are working for you to be able to make decisions on their own on that level with what they're seeing, understanding what the big picture looks like. What at the end do we want this to look like? Doesn't matter how we get there. We can get there 100 different ways. And, you know, one of the things analogies I use, or one of the examples I use, is 5 + 4 = 9, but so is 6 + 3. And 7 + 2. It doesn't matter how we got to 9, we got to 9. So there are lots of different ways to get there, but people have to understand we got to get to 9. Doesn't matter how we get there.
I really like that analogy. I've dropped my pen, but I want to write it down. I have to remember my maths, though. So if people want to work with you, Oakland, how do they get in touch with you?
Yeah, so I have a website.
Organizations.
Yeah, I have a website, www.ltcoakmccullough.com. And on there, it has my email address, it has my cell phone, it has all my social media that I'm a part of, LinkedIn. And I think that's how Chris and I got connected, was LinkedIn. And, you know, I'm on LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, or X, whatever they're calling it these days. And I'm on all that stuff. So if you want to get in touch with me, there's lots of ways to do it.
Mm-hmm. And Chris?
Yeah, I mentioned the sequence about artificial intelligence and folklore. I'll just say a little bit more about that. It's starting on Wednesday, the 6th of September. And the idea is I'm going over several weeks to look at stories from folklore, from religion, and a few from books and novels, and how our relationship with artificial intelligence is actually prefigured in a lot of those stories. Because a lot of stories, not all stories, but a lot of those traditional stories are about encounters with other intelligences, whether that's fairies or witches or whatever. It's very interesting to see how people have actually struggled with a lot of these issues before they even knew anything about or even thought about artificial intelligence. In fact, Jeanette Winston suggests that AI should stand for alternative intelligence, because there's not just the artificial. In fact, there are other intelligences in nature, in animals, and in fact in plants and fungi as well. We ignore that at our peril as humanity. So I'll put the link in the show notes when it becomes available, and you'll be able to follow the blog post there. And how about you, Gemma?
Yeah, so I have a Creatives Connect coming up in September on the 25th at 8 p.m. with Geraldine Snell, who runs Heart School. So she has a business quite similar to mine. We're both musicians and we both coach creatives. So we're going to come together and collaborate and share what we know about connecting to our sacred work as creatives and making sure that we do it. So you can join us that on the 25th, and you can listen to my music on Spotify, iTunes, Amazon Music, YouTube. I have lots of videos on there. So go check it out, Gemma Rosenthal, and at creativehearts.coach. And you can work with me one-on-one in coaching as well.
Good.
Thank you for being on this podcast, Oakland. And yeah, really enjoyed this conversation about leadership. And hopefully everyone will be inspired by listening to your words and listen to more people and get to know them. That's what I've taken from this podcast.
Yeah, well, good. I hope we helped somebody in today's show. And I loved being on the show. Thanks for having me as a guest, Chris and Jenna. Gemma.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And make sure you go listen to the other podcasts as well. We've got how many episodes? What's episodes this one?
I've got 34 plus this one.
Yes. Thank you, and bye.